Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So we have a transfer window, four more days. We're recording this early Monday morning in Boston. So if things change, just keep that in mind. We have some winners and losers on the Serie A weekend. A lot of excellent Twitter questions from our listeners. And we're going to close it out on a deep dive on Roma. This really isn't about transfers. It's more about Roma as a team with our friend Steve Cerruti. I haven't had him on in a while. So that'll be a fun way to end the podcast. But before we get to that, I am joined by our great friend, the producer, co-host of the podcast, Alex Goldberg. So Alex, after we recorded our last podcast last week, there was a lot of buzz on Arsenal having interest in Ivan Perisic. And then we had both Inter's coach Spalletti and the executive director Marotta confirmed that he had requested a transfer out, but that they needed fair compensation for him. So before we get to the negotiations and where we're at with that, since you have a vested interest in the race for a Champions League spot in the Premier League with your Chelsea, how concerned would you be if Arsenal had Perisic?
Yeah, I don't think I'd be very concerned at all, David. And I'm going to go at this like a Chelsea fan and like an Inter fan. I know Inter fans would probably say, Alex, don't be concerned at all. In fact, be happy that Arsenal might be acquiring Perisic, because I know he's kind of comparable to the way Chelsea fans feel about Willian. They have talent, but boy, can they be disappointing and really let you down. And really, with my Chelsea hat on, knowing what Perisic is as a player, knowing that he does have bright moments, he's been good for Croatia at times, for sure, but also knowing him in an Inter shirt, especially recently, I don't think it moves the needle for Arsenal much at all. The only way I think it improves them is maybe from just a depth standpoint. So they right now play Lacazette and Aubameyang together, and sometimes Aubameyang is more out wide. So I really don't think Perisic is going to impact their starting 11 at all. But maybe it will give them better winger depth. They have Mkhitaryan, who's definitely on the back nine, you could say. They have someone named Alex Iwobi, who's got talent, but not necessarily a world beater by any stretch. But I think Perisic is right there with those two, with a Mkhitaryan, with an Alex Iwobi. Perisic on his day, and it's so funny because I just said this for Willian yesterday, who played well in the FA Cup. Perisic on his day is a damn good player. But when is his day? How often is his day? So honestly, when I saw Fabrizio Romano tweeted out and the whole Di Marzio camp talk about this, nope, I was not concerned at all. And David, we're supposed to go on our gut reactions, and I just not at all was scared when I first saw this from a gut reaction standpoint. So maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm not wrong, but I think at most, this helps Arsenal from a depth standpoint. I don't think it'll all really help their Champions League chances. That'll be mainly based on their starting 11 and their best players. So, David, now that I've given my opinion on what it would be like for a Chelsea fan if Arsenal got Perisic, how do you feel about Perisic's season?
Yeah, so no doubt about it. He's had a very disappointing season for Inter. Now, he did have a great World Cup. I thought he was one of Croatia's best players there. I think he was a big factor in Inter going back to the Champions League last season. So, you know, I don't know as well nearly as you, Arsenal, how he would fit there. I rate him as a player more than you do. Yeah, granted, very inconsistent in this season. We barely saw the flashes of him, but I could see him on a change of scenery because he wants to leave, like being motivated and being like, you know, an injection of enthusiasm for him. So I'm a little bit more optimistic than you. On the other hand, you know, he is going to turn 30 soon. I can see why Inter would be open to moving him for the right compensation, and we'll get to that in a second. The window really is now to sell him. Now, I know the report, like, say he goes for, you know, option to buy loan, and it's like 35 million. I know a lot of people would say, oh, look, Inter was stupid. They should have sold him to Man United when they made a big offer years ago. But to me, the difference is, look, without Perisic, they wouldn't have gone back to the Champions League last season. I mean, that's maybe unfair, but he was a big contributor to him. So, okay, say they lose 15, 20 million compared to selling him a year before. Let's also not forget that they made a lot of money on the revenue for the Champions League. So it does feel like the right time for both Perisic and Inter to go. So we'll have to see what happens there.
Yeah, the one thing I will say is if Perisic is playing well, I know he can be dangerous down the flanks, and they have a handful of players, especially Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who can also be dangerous down the flanks. Aubameyang's a good poacher. So if Perisic can deliver a nice cross, maybe Aubameyang and him could make a good link up. It's just I have to go on that gut feeling. If it's going to be anything like Perisic this season, I'm not scared at all. So, David, the most important question here probably is, what's the latest on the actual negotiation between Inter and Arsenal?
Yeah, so this is an interesting one. So Arsenal would like to get him on loan with option to buy. They're open to giving Inter, you know, a considerable amount of money for the loan, and then rediscuss this in the summer for, you know, just an option to buy, nothing vested or forced. Now Inter, you know, interestingly, a club who likes to always try to get deals on these loans with option to buy. When it comes for outgoing, they don't feel so much the same way. And to be honest, another thing that I found a little bit ironic is that Inter in recent years for financial fair play, they got not around it, but they were able to meet their parameters by selling young players. And the Zaniolo one looks like it's going to come back to, it already came back to bite them in the ass, but they have been able to avoid selling a big name. So I have to say, I kind of find it ironic that Marotta arrives and one of the first things that happens is a big name player has to leave. And he's like, hey, the will of the player. So and we'll get to how that hasn't changed that Juve though on the Benatia letter. So I got a chuckle out of that. So Inter doesn't want a loan with option to buy. Arsenal, from what I understand, can really only do these loans. Is it possible that they kind of meet down the middle and Inter says, okay, you have to pay us more for the loan, like such an amount that it's almost like illogical to then not use the option to buy in the summer because you've invested so much in the loan, kind of a little bit what Juve fought with Milan with Higuain, although we saw how that ended up going. So I don't know. I think there's a decent chance this happens. I think it is going to be somewhat on a formula of loan with option. Maybe it's a vested option or a high fee for the loan. Now, the other factor is, you know, how is Inter going to replace Perisic? Because they do need so. Like, look, they could slot in Akita Balde in the starting lineup. They have Politano, who's had a very good season overall. I saw someone suggest on Twitter, and this makes a lot of sense, that they could recall Karamov from his loan in Liga. He's been good there, and he's been a spark for Inter. The other option is Carrasco, who is in China now and wants to come back. Now, the issue with Carrasco is that his wages, like he's currently earns more than what Inter are offering Icardi for his extension. And that would just look bad. Like Icardi could definitely use that as leverage and say, why should I be paid less than someone who just arrived? And to me, that's also a factor when people suggest that Ozil could be going to Inter for a Perisic, which, you know, in some ways it makes sense because with Nainggolan being a bust so far, they could use kind of a midfielder that can move the needle there. So let's see what happens. I'm going to write about this for ESPN tomorrow in my last transfer rumor radar, but definitely a situation to look at. But now that we got that out of the way, we had a really unbelievable weekend of Serie A action, a lot of really exciting games. So let's name our winners and losers. I'm going to start in the order of the matches. We had Sassuolo with a win. We had Locatelli, who I've been critical of. I'm not surprised he hasn't started often this season, but he did have a key goal. Also, shout out to Peluso, the former Juve defender, who had an excellent match marking Pavoletti, one of the best strikers on mid to lower table teams in Serie A. So shout out to Sassuolo. Then we had Quagliarella. Granted, it was on penalties, but he has matched Battistuta's 11-game streak scoring in Serie A. Unbelievable. I love seeing all the love that Quagliarella's getting. We also had Gabbiadini score off the bench. Then we had the Milan-Napoli match, which was a 0-0 draw, but I found it to be a very intriguing match. Once again, Bakayoko had another really, really strong match. He's been Milan's best player for quite some time now. And Piontek, who I thought off the bench in the last 20 minutes, looked pretty dangerous. Then we had Fiorentina, and on Sunday, we really had some crazy games. The early game between Fiorentina and Chievo, Muriel scores again, Chiesa with the game winner. Really an exciting match. Then in the race to avoid relegation, there were two very important road away wins. We had Frosinone, who crushed Bologna on an away win, and Spal, who surprisingly beat Parma on an away match. Very important wins for them. Frosinone is still fully in the relegation zone. Spal actually has created some good distance there. Then we had another incredible match, and this was Atalanta-Roma. We had Roma go up 3-0, and Atalanta not only come back, but almost win the match. It made me think of Sarri's old quote from earlier this season that in Serie A, game 2-0, it's over, nothing we can do. We've seen that time and time again not be the case, and we saw that now even with three goals that it can happen. A couple of shout-outs in the match. Zeko back on the score sheet. Papu Gomez, who to me wasn't that great in the first half of the season, but he's been really good since the break. He was rumored to potentially leave for a rich contract in Saudi Arabia. And Gasperini put a veto, and he's done really well. And then we had Zapata, who missed the penalty, but then still scored, keeping his streak going. That was really an exciting match. And then we had Torino, which their win against Inter. They've had Inter's number. They haven't lost to them in five matches in a row. Zaza and Belotti didn't score, but defender Izzo scored, and he had scored against Inter before. So big win for Torino. I actually think Torino is a pretty intriguing team second half of the season. Then we had the last match between Lazio and Juve. And I thought Lazio put in a really valiant effort. I think they are a team that consistently does well against Juve. Even when they lose, they really had them on the ropes. In the first half, Juve had no shots on goal. That hadn't happened in a very long time. And Milinkovic-Savic had another strong performance. He definitely looks back to his former standard. And then we had Cancelo and Bernardeschi change the match coming off the bench. Cancelo, just really unbelievable. I think Cancelo is the player that Juve fans think Douglas Costa might still be, and Douglas Costa has a lot of the talent. But I think Cancelo, even better between the two, even in an offensive position, really what an acquisition from Juve, and Bernardeschi too made a big impact. So those are our winners. Now let's go to the flip side of the losers. We had in our winners and losers very often Lorenzo Insigne, who had gotten off to a great start to the season playing in a new role. And now he hasn't scored in 3 months. Usually he does well in San Siro, but he really didn't do much against Milan. And with the way Milik is playing and maybe Mertens getting more space, Insigne is still going to be a starter and all, but he has struggled recently. And then we had Udinese, who lost to Sampdoria. They're going to be on retreat for the week. They have really struggled. Once they made the coaching change, Nicola had given them a spark to begin with, but they've struggled recently. Speaking of coaching changes, Pippo Inzaghi, I'm not sure if it's official as we recorded, but he's going to be sacked at Bologna. To me, had he not been a big-name player from the past, he would have been sacked long ago. I know Bologna doesn't have an good squad. I said it at the beginning of the season. I'm often wrong, but I pegged Bologna as a team who could be relegated at the beginning of the season. They've made some additions in January, but losing at home Frosinone in that fashion, really, really poor. He's almost certainly going to be replaced by another former Milan manager in Siniša Mihajlović. Then for Inter's loss to Torino, Spalletti has struggled. He used Lautaro Martinez and Icardi together, partly because Perisic didn't play in this match with all the transfer rumors. Lautaro Martinez missed the sitter to begin the match. Icardi didn't have a good performance there. And then the last one, Allegri. Look, you know, you've been the first half that was the worst performance in ages. I know Allegri got a lot of praise for getting these substitutions right with Cancelo and Bernardeschi. And I don't want to take too much away from him, but let's be honest, what other Serie A club can bring off players like that off the bench? Do we really praise him that much for that? Maybe he didn't get the starting lineup right, and the first part of the performance of the team was really, really poor. This felt like the signature type of Allegri match where he infuriates Juve Twitter for like 75 minutes and then he turns it around. I've always defended Allegri. I think whenever he leaves Juve, and I'm not so convinced that it's going to be next season, I actually think people are going to miss him, how consistent he's been in Serie A. But I think praising him so much for the substitutions, maybe praise more Juve as a club for being so patient and getting to the point of having so many great options off the bench. Okay, so those are our winners and losers. Things that are always winners are the great questions that we receive from our listeners. You can always send them in using the CalcioLand hashtag. We have quite a few on transfers with the transfer window still in full swing. If you have questions on those, Serie A, TV, music, films, let us know. So let's get started. Which ones are we going to go over now, Alex?
All right, David, I love talking about this player. I don't know why, but could Sebastian Giovinco really head to Saudi Arabia?
So people have been asking me about this, and I have to be honest, when the first reports emerged on this, and I know his agent, D'Amico, tweeted pictures from Saudi Arabia, and I know Toronto hasn't extended his contract, which expires at the end of the 2019 season in MLS. I was like, huh, this might feel like they're just trying to put pressure on Toronto to get him, more wages, a longer contract, something like that. But I did some digging, and there's definitely confirmation that he received a huge offer from the biggest club in Saudi Arabia, considerably more than what he's paid in Toronto. And again, we're recording this Monday morning. The Athletic, where I work, one of the reporters there reported that Giovinco left the training camp that Toronto has in California right now and return to Canada to assess the transfer situation. So I don't think it's 100% given he's leaving. Again, this might be a negotiation ploy, but there's definitely there's definitely some fire on the smoke. So let's see what happens there.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Are Liverpool interested in Brescia midfielder Tonali?
So this player's gotten a lot of hype. He kind of looks like Pirlo, plays for Brescia, which is Pirlo's hometown and where he was launched. And I got to be honest, I haven't watched much of him, so I can't really describe him as a player. You guys know how I feel about young players being compared to legends in general. So I did some digging. There's many clubs interested in Tonali. There's multiple clubs in the Premier League. Liverpool's definitely one of them. Brescia's president, Cellino, who some of you might remember from his time at Leeds and used to be at Cagliari, is asking for a huge return for him. As it stands now, based on the digging that I did, I would say Juve and Inter are still the favorites. So a derby di mercato between those two. But definitely Liverpool are in the mix. Now, how concrete their interest is and how close it is, that remains to be seen. I don't get the vibe that it's that close either way.
All right, David, we got a personal question here from Derek Favretto. What do you make of Milan's transfer window so far?
So, look, I think they've done really well because, you have to look at the way Higuain was performing for them, and he was a distraction. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't think Higuain's going to do well at Chelsea because I still believe he can. I just think Higuain, for whatever reason, wasn't a good fit there and they had to move on. We've already seen some addition by subtraction. We talked about the Ewing theory for Milan. I fought against Napoli. They look quite good, which was a bigger test than what we saw against Genoa. Piontek, 20 minutes, very small sample size, look good. I think, him and Paqueta are young players. Yeah, they did pay a lot for them, but not so much that they couldn't potentially have some future resale value. But beyond that, they are closer in age to the rest of Milan's young core. So I think you have to be pretty happy if you're a Milan fan. And look, I think Gattuso deserves a ton of credit between all the injuries, all the distractions. If the season ended right now, Milan's in the Champions League now. Now, Milan is short one offensive winger for sure, someone with speed. Gerard Delafu would love to go back to Milan. The problem is Watford is asking a lot for him. That's kind of like the reverse of the Inter and Arsenal situation. Like they want, a full sale for a big amount. I'm not sure if Milan thinks Delafu's worth a big sacrifice. So let's see if maybe they can offer a player, try to work something out. I think Delafu, I thought he was very good for Milan that half season there. He has the skill set, speed and pace, some creativity that Milan lacks. So if they can bring him in or a comparable player, I think you have to be very happy where Milan's at, especially considering the fact that they have those financial fair play situations.
All right, David, how about this? When both Bonaventura and Lucas Bilia are healthy, who do you see as a better fit with Bakayoko and Paqueta?
Yeah, I think actually Bakayoko and Paqueta really is the start of a pretty intriguing midfield for Milan. Quite frankly, it's been a long time since they've had a caliber midfield to compete with like the top for a top four spot in Serie A. And those two, especially Bakayoko, really looks like one of those. So I got to be honest, I'm not the biggest Bonaventura fan, as Milan Twitter knows. It doesn't mean that I don't think he's a good player, but I see him a little bit closer to Paqueta, and I'm not sure he's really a great fit with that. I see Bonaventura, when he comes back next season, potentially being more of an intriguing option up front as a winger. I could see Bilia slotting in pretty well with Bakayoko and Paqueta. And I got to be honest, if Milan, you know, if they can't keep both, redeem Bakayoko and keep Frank Kessie, I would have no hesitation in selling Frank Kessie to finance buying Bakayoko. So I'm a bigger Bilia fan than most. So it's kind of like the opposite of Bonaventura. That seems to me like a pretty intriguing midfield if Paqueta continues to grow.
I totally agree. I think the combination of Bakayoko and Paqueta is rather intriguing and could be really good down the line. All right, David, how about this? What did you make of Inter acquiring Cedric Suarez?
Yeah, that's how quickly the transfer window happens. This one, it was starting to develop right as we were recording last time. Inter completed the deal. The way I see it, and I haven't watched them, definitely not as much as you, Alex, in the Premier League. This makes a lot of sense because Inter invested in Vrsaljko. They have an expensive option to buy him in the summer because of injuries. Vrsaljko hasn't been good. He hasn't been the addition that Inter wanted. The option to buy Suarez is about at least 8 million less than Vrsaljko. Vrsaljko can't help him in the short term. Suarez can help him right away. I read that he led the Premier League in crosses. I'm not sure if that's kind of like Candreva crosses where it's like volume and it doesn't really help. But I kind of like this move. And, you know, Cedric Suarez was on the World Cup team over Cancelo. Now, I doubt that would happen now, but it seems like an intriguing player. So I think this is a pretty good move by Inter. Again, he helps them right away. Cheaper option to buy in the summer. This makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, decent player. And I certainly was not impressed with D'Ambrosio yesterday. So you could say there's definitely a need for him. All right. This next question is rather exciting because I think everybody is excited about him. David, Zaniolo looks like an absolute baller. What are the odds he leaves in the summer?
And Zaniolo had another great performance against Atalanta, playing, you know, in a lot of different positions in the field. We're also going to get into it in the interview on Roma. We talked even more about him. So I'm very impressive. The kid's really, really the real deal. You know, look, we've talked about it before. It's kind of hard to gauge what his value is right now. To me, this isn't like Belotti with Torino, where he had been around for a few years, had the breakout season, and that was the ideal time to buy. He's so young. It's such a strong pedigree that I don't think it's a matter that Roma's like, oh, geez, we have to sell him right now. He is negotiating an extension with Roma. To me, it makes perfect sense for all involved for him to at least stay another season. And look, you know, I would love to say that he's BB or Roma lifer and is, you know, follows like De Rossi career path. But, you know, let's take it one at a time. I'd be really surprised if he leaves anytime soon. Now, the caveat to this is if Roma doesn't make the Champions League, there could be some big ramification, even beyond Manolas. And the fact that Roma got such a great deal on Zaniolo and the Nainggolan deal, yeah, it's good, but it could also be a double-edged sword because in that deal, he was valued at 4 million euro. So, you know, I always tell people, you know, selling a player for 40 million, it's not the same. Milan selling Bonucci for 40 million or hypothetically Roma selling Zaniolo for 40 million this summer is very different because it's all about amortization and what you paid for him before. So Roma could say, geez, you know, we could make like a huge plusvalenza on here. So that's, I would look at that, but in general,
I'd be very surprised if he doesn't stay at Roma at least another season, and then we'll see what happens.
And we tweeted from our Calcioland account yesterday that FIFA is probably going to need to give Zaniolo an upgrade, maybe team of the week this coming Wednesday, 2 assists yesterday. A 64 bronze card, not gonna cut it. All right, next Twitter question, David. Speaking of Zaniolo, do you buy the story Juventus sporting director Paratici left his summer shopping list on a piece of paper in a restaurant?
Man, I love this story. I really do. I mean, I find it so insane on so many levels. I mean, starting with the fact that Paratici would have to remind himself about Zaniolo, Milinkovic-Savic, the Savic center back on Atletico Madrid. I mean, geez, you know, if you need to write that down to remind yourself of these players, like, you wouldn't be Juve's sporting director to begin with. So I really enjoyed that one. Like, look, you know, I could be really wrong, and I try not to talk about the work of other sites, reporters at all, but that was really pretty absurd. But you know what? I think Paratici should now double down on this, and I think he should just leave random notes everywhere he goes, transfers, bang lists, like, you name it. I think he should just embrace it and have fun with this.
Amen. Totally agree. And that question was hilarious. All right. Next question. David, how much will Juve miss Bonatia?
So, look, I wrote about this for our friends at Euro Fantasy Game yesterday, and this was before Bonucci got hurt. I don't like this move for Juve at all because, you know, say what you will, and I know Bonatia is injury prone and he has hurt right now, but I think as a pure defender, he's the second best on Juve after Chiellini, now that Barzagli is really losing his battle against Father Time. Then you add to that that Bonucci got hurt yesterday, is going to be out supposedly a month. That's a big problem. And look, I'm not the biggest Rugani guy. You guys know that. I thought he was pretty good in the first half yesterday. Maybe not so much after. Caceres, look, you know, we don't know how healthy he is. You know, this is a player that was linked to a move to Japan, was linked to Bologna and Parma, and now all of a sudden could find himself having to play a very important match in the Champions League. So I don't know. I think, you know, Juve fans are trying to say this isn't such a big deal. It's like, you know, I guess you must really believe in Rugani. And if you do, I hope he proves me wrong. So let's see. But I could see this being a problem. And now we know that the players will still reign supreme at Juve. We had thought that maybe Paratici was the wartime consigliere we had talked about with the Godfather reference. So let's see. I could see this being a problem, and it was really ironic that right after it happened, Bonucci got hurt.
All right, David, our favorite prisoner of the moment has sent in a question, and it is, who will be the first to coach a team from Milan or Roma between De Zerbi, Giampaolo, or Diversa?
So shout out to prisoner of the moment, always brings it good questions. So I've been thinking a lot about it. So you guys know that I like De Zerbi quite a bit. Offensive-minded coach, plays similar style to Barcelona. Diversa has been the up-and-coming coach because of what he's done at Parma. He's much more defensive-minded. But when I think of, you know, who could coach either Milan or Inter or Lazio or Roma, to me, Giampaolo is the closest because he's already on a upper mid-table club. Like, to me, in a lot of ways, it's about, like, you have to go up tiers. Giampaolo used to be at Empoli, then worked his way up at Sampdoria. He's been doing really well there. He's a Sarri disciple, plays that intriguing style. He's very good at developing players, increasing their transfer value. So I think he's the one that's the closest. I think either De Zerbi or Diversa would have to go to, like, you know, a Torino or Fiorentina type before they can make the leap. I could see Diversa eventually getting there, so De Zerbi. But I think actually, you know, Giampaolo would be a pretty intriguing coach for either Lazio or Roma. I think actually he'd fit quite well there.
All right, David, I love this next question. Who is the most frustrating player in Serie A?
Well, I think it's the one that we talked about at the top. I think it's Ivan Perisic because, you know, when he was linked to Man United, I wasn't, you know, lying. I wasn't exaggerated. To me, I was like, yeah, that guy is a perfect winger for the Premier League or a top club, just has everything. Very good offensive, very good at dribbling, good at crossing, good at assists, scores goals, good work rate, defensive minded. We saw what he did in the World Cup for Croatia. Like, I thought him and Zukić Modric were like were really the main ingredients on that team. But this season, he just hasn't shown it. Even the season before, yeah, he definitely helped Inter a lot. But there's like, you know, he'll go like a month at a time where you're like, is he even playing? Like, he completely disappears. Another one that I have to say is a little bit frustrating to me is Dybala. It just seems like, you know, I'm a huge Dybala guy. I've seen him live a few times. If you see him play in person, you just know. I mean, that guy just oozes talent, his touch on the ball, world class. But it's been kind of hard for Juve to really make him fit on the team. So for me, it's a little bit frustrating because it's like this guy could really be one of the elite players in Serie A, and he's had moments of that, but not so much. On the bright side for Dybala in the Champions League, he's been getting it done. So hopefully for Juve, he can keep that going.
Yeah, I think Dybala is a great shout because, you know, I live in kind of the Premier League bubble a lot of the time. And when Premier League fans think about acquiring Dybala, their mouth waters. They love it. But I'll be honest, considering his talent and considering how damn good he can be, he really is not a highly mentioned player throughout the top five leagues, at least as not as much as he should be. So I totally think that's a great shout there. All right, David, next Twitter question. I will butcher his name, but we'll move past it. Last week was Giorgio Chinaglia's birthday. What is your favorite memory about him, and which Serie A player is most like him?
Yeah, so I'm old, but I'm not old enough to say that I saw Chinaglia play live in matches, but he's a historic player for Lazio, moved over here to the United States, played on the New York Cosmos, one of the funniest personalities in calcio history, a great player, a very well-known striker. His nickname was Long John. And, you know, one of my favorite memories of him, it was like when Italy won the World Cup, he was a commentator for ESPN. He was awesome, was talking so much trash on that. That's my favorite memory of him, just really hilarious. But, you know, I've read a lot of his quotes when he was a player and when he was Pelé's teammate on the New York Cosmos. He was telling Pelé, the fans are coming to see me, not you. Like, he had that fun arrogance. Like, I think he was in on the joke. He was pretty full of himself, but it was always in a funny way. So it's kind of hard. Like, you know, I was thinking who's somewhat similar to him. Like, Totti has a little bit of that because of the Roman thing. But Totti is actually more of an introverted guy, a little bit more reserved. And I've learned more about that, about Totti, with Paolo Condo's book. Like, there is some of Cassano in him, but Chinaglia, maybe, I don't think Cassano's ever in on the joke when he says something outrageous. I think he truly believes it. And I think Chinaglia's a little bit more in on the joke. So it's kind of hard. So if anyone of our listeners, especially the older ones that know Chinaglia, what he was all about, if they have suggestions, I'd be very interested to hear them.
All right, David, last Twitter question. And I got to be honest, I am really interested in your answer. I think it's a great, great Twitter question. You're often reticent about making calls on young players because of the small sample size. Do you feel the same way about actors?
Very, very good question. And I've been thinking a lot about it. I'm going to say that when it comes to players, football players or any athlete, I'm much more reticent to say, hold your horses. Let's not name this guy the greatest thing since sliced bread because of like a half season, handful of games or hypes. I think with actors, I'm much more, you know, open to like a few good performances early to say that that's going to translate. I mean, I remember when DiCaprio made his first few movies, and he did one with De Niro when he was a young kid, where he was amazing. And as he was growing up, did the Basketball Diaries and all, like, you just knew, like, this kid just really, really had it. He's just a great actor. Timothée Chalamet, I'm sure I'm butchering his name. He's kind of the up-and-coming actor right now. He was in Call Me By Your Name, that was nominated for the Oscar last year, and Lady Bird, really, really an exciting actor. So yeah, I'm going to say that with actors, I'm much more willing to get excited for them. Maybe it's also because I don't cover movies and all nearly as much. I think by now, I think people, you know, notice that I kind of tend to get annoyed when people are so put people on pedestals and I'm like, hold your horses. Maybe if I was more into like Hollywood Twitter, like I know what our friend Andrew Barker tells me about all the stuff he reads on like movie Twitters. I'm like, geez, you know, that would drive me crazy. So maybe that's why I answer that way. So speaking of being driven crazy, one thing that has really helped me towards the end of the transfer window when I get really cranky is using the products from BioCBD Plus. So we've talked a lot about them on the podcast. There's a lot of health benefits. This is completely legal. You know, it helps you sleep. It helps you if you have anxiety. It also helps you with inflammation, headaches, and whatnot. So they've been great supporters of the podcast. We do have a discount code, CulturaLand15, to get a 15% discount if you want to use them. We always tweet the link. I'm a big fan of them. I talked about last week, I've been using the pill form because I also like it has turmeric, which is also another very good thing for inflammation. So I've been a big fan of this. I know, Alex, you're a fan too. Have you? I'm assuming you've kept using them. Anything else that stands out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a fan of all three products we've talked about, the capsules that you just mentioned, the oil, which is so awesome that you put on wherever you're hurting on your body, wherever you're achy, and it works instantly. And of course, their pen with their cartridge. I assume maybe a good amount of our listeners have a little bit of experience with vaping, and vaping is very vague, so I'm comfortable saying it. But this pen is so easy to use. I have come across some pens in my day that are not easy to use, that malfunction, that get stuck. This one does not. It is 100% legal to use this, and it is so easy to use. And one more thing I think I should probably mention is we have mentioned that these CBD products help you with sleep. But if you're feeling anxious throughout the day and you want to relax or kind of get rid of some of that anxiety, it's not to say that if you take, say, two puffs out of this pen that you're going to be sleeping in your meeting at work. No, not at all. It will make you feel relaxed. It'll almost do exactly what you want it to do. Now, at nighttime, if you want to fall asleep, you'll obviously just do it a little bit more and it will really help you with sleep. So it really has so many positives and it really has a lot of versatility, all of their CBD products. So, David, as you said, CulturaLand15, all lowercase, CulturaLand15 is how you can get 15% off the awesome CBD products at biocbdplus.com.
Okay, so let's close the podcast with our interview with our friend Steve Cerruti. We're taking a deep dive on Roma. Now, keep in mind, I recorded this with him on Saturday. This was before the Roma-Atalanta match. Off the top of my head, there's nothing that sounds particularly egregious because of the match. So I think you'll enjoy it. Really no transfer talk, but if you're interested in what Roma is all about, and they have been a very intriguing club, this will be right up your alley. And we look forward to chatting with you later this week as we wrap up the January window. As always, if you like the podcast, we appreciate your support. This is a completely free podcast. We've never asked you to fund it in any way. We appreciate your help with the questions, but please help us promote the podcast. Please tweet about it. Tell your friends. If you could leave us a review on iTunes, we've gotten some really good ones recently. That's a great way to support us. So thanks for your support, and we look forward to chatting with you later this week. And for the interview segment of the podcast, it's been a while since we talked about Roma, and I kind of take it as a good sign because usually in the January window or any transfer window, we talk a lot about Roma, but the team's been doing rather well, a young team, and it's starting to strive now. So we haven't talked a lot about them. And, you know, usually you guys know when we talk about Roma, we have our great friend John Solano. But if you remember at the end of last summer, we had a great guest on Roma, Steve Cerruti, who's back. For those of you not familiar with him, he's based here in the U.S., works at ESPN. He is the producer of The Will Cain Show. And also one of my favorite podcasts, Ryan Russillo's podcast. And on that one especially, you hear Steve, you know, interact quite a bit with the host. He's not just the producer there. And Steve is a huge Roma fan and very knowledgeable. So, Steve, welcome back to CulturaLand. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you, David. Great to be on again.
Awesome. Okay. So what I wanted to do today was kind of start really big picture and then narrow down on a couple of topics on Roma. So very simply, what grade would you give to Roma so far in this season?
Oh man, this is such a tough question. Only because, you know, if you asked me this a month or two ago, it would be probably a straight F. I would say now with, you know, they've obviously in the league had somewhat of a resurgence. They've sort of figured out how they want to play. They've been getting some wins. And if you also take into account the Champions League, they're in the knockout stages. And honestly, they got a pretty great draw, and there's a possibility they can make the quarterfinals. I'd probably give it a solid C, maybe a C-, only because I still think they're underperforming. I mean, some of the points they dropped earlier in the season, I'm terrified are going to come back and bite them in the race for the top four. But the way they're playing now has sort of rejuvenated and improved sort of how I feel about the club. And a lot of these guys that people were saying might be busts that they got in the January transfer window, including Cristante, are playing much better now. So if they keep this up, you know, I'm pretty optimistic. But just because of the way that they started and how poor some of the performances they had, and not only just how the points that they dropped, but how they dropped them, you know, blowing 2-0 leads to several teams and losing to teams that they have no business, you know, dropping points to. I have to give it a C-. But like I said, I'm pretty optimistic for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I have to tell you, one of my biggest regrets, because I really try not being a prisoner of the moment, trying to take more of a long view with Roma, is I should have been more patient, because a lot of the young players really have strived. So I remember last time you were on, it was shortly after the deal for Nainggolan was done.
Oh, yeah.
And you had a very astute observation, which I'm not going to lie, I've used quite a bit in some of my content, that Roma basically said, you know, finishing second, third, or fourth, there's really not that much difference in the end. It brings you back to the Champions League anyway. So maybe we'll take, you know, one step back to take two forward. And we're going to get to Zaniolo in a second, because I want to get into him. But I want to talk about another player that essentially was part of that deal, because a lot of, you know, Inter got Zaniolo, Roma got Zaniolo, Santon, they also got money in that deal. And most of it was reinvested in Pastore, who also has a very substantial salary. And other than, you know, some two nice back heel goals, he's been a pretty big disappointment. But on the flip side, we've had Cristante, who was their other expensive acquisition of the summer, got off to a really slow start. He looked like the typical player that does great on Atalanta, struggles everywhere. And he's been really quite good recently. So let me ask you, what has surprised you more, Cristante's improvement or Pastore's disappointing season overall?
It's a tough question, because I've always been a believer in Cristante, even during the beginning of the season when he sort of was quote-unquote struggling. A lot of that was because he wasn't being played in the right position, and I still don't think he's really being played in the exact position that he would want to, although I like him in sort of that deeper line playmaking role that they're playing him in now. So I've really never had any doubts about Cristante. So I'm going to have to say Pastore, although I did believe that Pastore would have a good impact on the club, and I think he sort of will. But the issue for him now, obviously, and it's been for a few years, is he hasn't been able to stay healthy. And since he hasn't been able to stay healthy for Roma, there's been several guys that have passed him sort of in the pecking order. But having said that, I still thought that he would, you know, kind of play that number 10 role, be that creative guy that Roma have needed since maybe even Pjanic left a few years ago. And, you know, I still think there's still a story to be told for him. I think he's going to have a role going forward, because, you know, Roma have always been crushed with injuries, and I'm just waiting for more, and they've already had some this year. So I think he's going to, you know, get another chance sort of later this year. But if I had to pick, I would definitely say Pastore. I love Cristante. I tell you this, when De Rossi went out, you know, there was really no clear replacement for him at the club. They didn't really have like a midfielder who could kind of go forward but also be a little bit creative and kind of boss around the midfield. And he had a couple of shaky performances here and there, but over the last couple of months, I mean, he's been an absolute stud, and you could argue he's one of the top three most important players for Roma right now.
Yep. So let's stay on the midfield for Roma. Let's talk about Zaniolo, who's been one of the best stories in all of Serie A this season. Made his debut against Real Madrid, already on the Italian national team senior squad. And then he really showed why he was such a highly rated prospect in the recent matches. So let me ask you, I have a feeling, you know, Zaniolo might be really one of the most exciting things to happen at Roma in a while. Have you found his emergence to be more exciting than the Champions League run that we saw last year? Somewhat comparable as far as how exciting it is to be a Roma fan having Zaniolo?
So, you know, David, like, it's hard for Roma fans to get attached to some of these players only because, you know, just of their transfer strategy. So I'm going to say that last year's run, and at the end of the day, you know, what do? You play to win, you know, the old Herm Edwards school. You play to win the game. So that is certainly, like, you know, the most important thing would be them making runs and winning, you know, hopefully trophies in the future. Watching Zaniolo is one of the greatest joys that you can have watching soccer right now. And it's honestly, for a 19-year-old, the composure that he has, the personality he shows on the pitch is absolutely incredible. He shows probably more, I would say, you know, more guts than anyone on the pitch too. Roma have always had this sort of mentality of, like, waiting for things to go wrong, and he's the one out there that's constantly just taking it to everyone. He never lets up. He's relentless on the pitch. But I will say nothing has compared to, you know, coming back from that 4-1 Barcelona deficit and advancing in the Champions League last year. We were live on the air on Will's show. I think we talked about this a little bit last time. And I was barely working even on the show. I was watching the game. I apologized to the guy after the show. I was like, hey, you're going to have to pick up the slack for me a little bit here. That was one of my favorite sporting moments of my life. And it's funny, a lot of people were like, oh, they didn't even win, you know, they didn't even win the title. A lot of people don't understand soccer, really. Or, like, they didn't even win the championship. How could that be one of your favorite moments? And, like, you have to understand, Roma beating Barcelona, not only, you know, beating them in a Champions League match, but just in the fashion that they did it, that is one of the greatest accomplishments I think that the club may have ever had. And at the same time, it's sort of sad to say that, but it was such a magical run. And that team last year with Nainggolan and Strootman, it was kind of an older club, and you kind of knew things might change in the future, and they ultimately did, and a lot of those guys were let go. So it was kind of like a last hurrah for a group that I think a lot of Roma fans really, really liked. So as great as Zaniolo is and probably will be in the future, I have to go with the Champions League run last year.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about Roma's midfield. So you're a huge Cristante fan, and you've had faith in him longer than I have. Zaniolo, everyone has seen recently what he brings. There also has been Pellegrini, who I think has been really excellent playing in that Pastore role. I thought his assist on El Shaarawy's goal last weekend was really, really brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
So those are really three intriguing players, and they're all Italian. So tell me, out of these, like, which one do you think can have the biggest impact for Italy? Or do you think, you know, Mancini should say, hey, you know, it kind of works to have players that work together and maybe roll the dice and use maybe two or three of them at a time?
Yeah, I think, you know, we saw this with Juventus and their back line, the BBC, and a lot of what made them so great for the Italian national team, as many of the listeners, I assume, would know this, is just that, you know, they all knew how to play with each other. They played with each other for years. And I think this is a huge bonus for the Italian national team if Zaniolo, Pellegrini, and Cristante could all start playing together. I'm not sure exactly how they work. I mean, in Roma's last match, I believe the first time that they all had sort of played together. And it's a little bit weird because they don't necessarily have a true defensive midfielder. They all kind of want to be creative, so they're a little bit clunky and it leaves you a little bit exposed in the back. But I think this could only help the national team because, you know, even if you're playing two of them at a time, the familiarity that they have with each other, I think that could only really help Italy get back to where they want to be on the world stage. And I would say of the three of them, I love Pellegrini. You know, he had a slow start coming from Sassuolo and his return to Roma. And as good as Zaniolo is, Pellegrini is still the most creative midfielder that Roma has. And they dearly missed him when he was injured. And Zaniolo did about as well as anyone could replacing him. But Pellegrini is an absolute stud, and I think he can play a few different positions. I know he likes to sort of play the number 10 role. He likes to play up further, but in the last game, he played a little bit further back to have Zaniolo play up a little bit further. So he's very versatile. He's young. He's super creative. And I think, you know, he's probably the guy, you know, obviously we'll watch Zaniolo grow. And I'm not even sure we know exactly what Zaniolo's positioning is because, you know, he can play number 10. He can sort of play in a three-man midfield. There's even been talk about playing him out wide as sort of a wide attacking midfielder in the future because Roma sort of struggle in that area on the team. So, but if I had to pick one of them, I think Pellegrini is going to be an absolute stud going forward.
Yeah, I have to say, it was not long ago. I mean, I've been following the Italian national team since the late 80s. Like at the start of the season, I was like, I used to say, I've never seen so little talent on Italy. And that's really changed a lot because a lot of the players that you mentioned, and they really are just lacking like a really great striker to get back. And who knows, Mancini can try Zaniolo in that position on the national
team.
EDF
sort of played him as a false nine, and it was a little bit clunky, but I do believe he can sort of play that role. I don't know about consistently, but he's a goal scoring threat. He's consistent. He's got speed. He's got size. He's 6'3". I think Zaniolo can certainly potentially, you know, learn how to play up front. I just hope that, you know, I think his better position is a little bit, it's just behind probably the striker. Yeah. So, you know, if the national team can sort of find a striker that can pair him with Zaniolo, I think that's sort of the best role for them going forward.
Yeah, I mean, to me, his ideal role at the club level is in a midfield three, maybe to the right or to the left. Like in Italy, you'd call that a mezzala. I think like he really kind of reminds me a lot of Pogba's game, but on the national team, because now all of a sudden you throw Barella in the mix, there is some good young talent there. So I wanted to ask you about another player who I think absolutely fits the description of he feels like a new addition. And this is something Galliani, Milan's director, used to kind of say kind of as a joke, as a player that came back from injuries. And this is Karsdorp. So it's not just the injuries. It's also the fact that when he arrived, he was a very highly rated player. He was supposed to be one of Monchi's first big acquisitions, battled injuries for a while. And recently, he's been quite impressive. So tell me, what's your thoughts on Karsdorp? And do you see him as a potential long-term starter, whatever that means at a club like Roma too, though?
Yeah, you know, it's weird. About a month ago, maybe even less, it was almost guaranteed that he was going back on loan to Feyenoord to sort of, you know, because he had no place in this Roma side. And, you know, Florenzi is maybe the most polarizing player at Roma. They're, you know, quote-unquote starting right back. But, you know, most people just don't believe he ever has been or will be a proper right back. And that's why they bought Karsdorp in the first place. And he obviously had the knee injury and he had injuries going back, you know, for a while. That was certainly a question mark. And then he gets hurt in the first match that he plays. And there's all these setbacks, but he is still very young. And for me, Karsdorp is, you know, I have no questions about him going forward. The guy can put in a cross. He's fast. He's got great dribbling skills. The problem is how exposed he may leave you in the back. And honestly, there are times when Florenzi leaves the squad completely exposed in the back and doesn't really understand positioning for a right back, which I know John Solano was talking about. It frustrates the heck out of him because he always points out, you know, he's been playing right back for 4 or 5 years now. And the fact that he doesn't understand sort of basic positioning drives everyone mad. So if you're going to insert Karsdorp into the lineup, you already kind of had a right back that doesn't have a ton going, that doesn't, I'm sorry, offer you a ton, you know, defensively. I'm all for letting it kind of roll with Karsdorp because I think he's, you know, he's one of those guys where I feel like he just needs the confidence of playing week in and week out. And he hasn't really had that in years. And he was almost written off basically, but he's put in a couple matches, you know, back to back that have looked pretty good, you know. He had a ball in the last match that was absolutely great. And his dribbling skills are also, like I said, amazing. He gets himself out of some tricky situations. So if I'm EDF, I sort of roll with him and see how it goes. And that also kind of helps you maybe potentially move Florenzi up the field a little bit or play him in the midfield, which I think might even be his best position, even though Roma are kind of stacked in the midfield. So I think it's possible. I mean, they've certainly been looking for a right back forever. And you know, I think he fits the bill. I would be really disappointed if they sort of, you know, turn their backs on him again. But it looks like EDF has sort of brought him back into the fold. But we'll see. But I'm very hopeful that he can sort of become that guy for Roma.
Absolutely. Okay. So now let's we mentioned the great depth that Roma has in the midfield. You know, El Shaarawy is their leading goal scorer, which is kind of concerning, but they do have some talent up front. It's like Roma has struggled scoring goals. The defense, though, has been, I would say, the issue on the team. So would you say that Manolas is currently the most important player on Roma?
I would, yes. I think if he ever went down for an extended period of time, they would be, I mean, almost doomed, just because of how bad Fazio has been. You know, Marcano, who they got on a free, I know you love to talk about free transfers and how they're not actually free, but they got him on a quote unquote free transfer over the summer. And he was supposed to be kind of the guy that pushed Fazio. And I know he's already 30, but he was supposed to be somebody who could potentially be that starting guy or at least take over. And that hasn't worked out at all. He's been a disaster, although it's odd because he hasn't played a ton. It just doesn't seem like EDF doesn't trust him at all. But if they ever lost Manolas for, I don't know, a month, even more, I mean, I have no idea. Their defense is already bad now. I couldn't even imagine how bad it would be without him. He saves so with his speed and just like his positioning. He's certainly not a perfect player at center back. I think a lot of what Roma fans love about him is his passion. He's probably, I would say, other than De Rossi, the guy who sort of gets it as far as, you know, loving the club and that will to win. If they ever lost him, I couldn't imagine. I mean, they'd give up 3-4 goals a game easily. And, you know, Olsen has actually been very good this year, despite the fact that I don't think he has a ton of clean sheets, but it's really not his fault. The defense has just been an absolute disaster. And a lot of that, you know, a lot of what's saving their entire season is basically Manolas not allowing them to give up 3-4 goals a game. So I know a lot of fans will look at it and be like, you know, Roma, you know, they won last week 3-2. You know, the defense is terrible. Manolas is having a bad year, but it's actually not the case at all. He's saving them week in and week out. So I think, you know, we sort of thought, as Roma fans thought when De Rossi went down, that you know, we didn't have a replacement for him and it would be a struggle going forward. And it certainly was, because they tried Cristante out in that role. And Zanzi doesn't really work there as well. He sort of works more as a defensive midfielder, not really pushing forward. So a lot of Roma fans kind of maybe thought he was the most important piece that they couldn't lose. But I'm sort of with you on this one. I think Manolas, if they lost him, would be an absolute disaster.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's right below the truly elite center backs. You know, to me, it's Koulibaly,
yeah, I agree,
Chiellini, yeah, then Skriniar, and then right below that, Manolas. And yeah, I'm with you. I think his speed is really what stands out to me. And yeah, you're right. He also really gets what it means to be a Roma player. So let's talk a little bit about the striker position, because Dzeko, you know, I think he's a player you can't just measure his worth in goals. There's a lot of things as well. He is an older player. You know, Roma has to eventually find a replacement. And two players they've been linked to are Belotti and Duvan Zapata. So let me ask you, if you could have just one of those two, who would you pick as Dzeko's long-term replacement?
I mean, my first instinct would be to answer, could I answer C, Patrick Schick? But if that's off the table, I would have to go with Zapata, just because Belotti scares the hell out of me. You know, I know we had that season a couple years ago that was amazing, and Torino probably should have sold him right then and there if they were getting bids of 80-plus million. But, you know, and I also don't think Zapata is quite as good as his goal tally has been recently, although I do like him as a player, and he is a little bit older as well. But if I had to pick, I would go with Zapata. I believe, you know, he fits sort of the mold of the Dzeko type. He's big, he's strong, he's pretty much skilled in every facet of his game. And the only thing that I sort of have always thought with Dzeko, and the way that Roma have played with him, is everything goes through him. He's such a whenever he plays, you know, he demands the ball, and it's good and bad, right? Because he can hold up play. He can allow sort of runs to be made behind him. He's a great passer, but if he's not getting any service, he kind of pouts a lot. And sometimes when you know, they're struggling to get him service, you know, their offense has absolutely no success anywhere. So I worry about those big target man strikers sometimes, because I like the way that some teams somewhat like the old Napoli used to play, where it's very free flowing and everyone sort of up front can intertwine in different positions. And that's what I kind of like with Patrick Schick when he's in the lineup. I think, you know, people are much more free flowing and they don't feel like there's any pressure to get, you know, service to Dzeko. So I do worry a little bit about that style, and that would be the Duván Zapata style. But I'm just scared. I would be so scared of throwing any money at the Lazio, any real money at the Lazio, because I just don't know. You know, both guys are probably valued, and you would know this, what, 50, 40 for sure, 50 million. I would have a hard time paying that for either guy. But if I had to, I would go with Zapata.
Yeah. So you mentioned Schick, and that's let me add, he's been very impressive recently, finally showing the talent,
yeah.
You know, that he had at Sampdoria. So tell me your thoughts on him, because he was kind of like Karsdorp at the beginning of the transfer window. It was like, is this guy going to get loaned out so just so they can try to get his value back up? Like, how impressed have you been with him? It sounds like you really are. Do you think he can be the main striker at Roma for the next few years?
I think he can. And, you know, the only reason I think he can't, obviously, you know, a few months ago, it wasn't looking great for his future. And then Dzeko got injured. And he sort of got a string of starts. And honestly, they weren't very good the first few games he played. He looked like he didn't know what to do. He certainly isn't a hold up type striker. He's kind of more of the free flowing, almost like, striking. He needed a striking partner, and he wasn't getting that, you know, in any sort of formation that Roma would put together. But recently, you know, he's come in for some spot duty. He started. He's been scoring goals. He had a great, almost hockey assist in the last game on that third goal. It was the pass to Pellegrini that Pellegrini ultimately got to El Shaarawy for the 3-2 win. I would love for him to be the future, because you watch him with his national team, the Czech national team, and he is an absolute stud. He scores goals. He looks confident. He's gotten a new mental coach that I've heard you guys talk about, which I think obviously has been working. And I think that's what the crazy thing about it was, his lack of success was always mental. Because when you watch him, because a lot of Roma fans would be like, oh, he's you know, a Turbe 2.0. But I would always say that's so ridiculous, because, you know, when a Turbe got here, you can tell he was kind of a one-trick pony. He only was really great on the counterattack. He didn't really have a great footballing IQ. He didn't really, you know, he wasn't a creative type guy. With Schick, when I watch him out there, he's super creative. You know, he's great with the ball at his feet. He's got, he can shoot well. He can set others up well. And so I never thought he was a bust. I just thought this was all about, you know, kind of him getting acclimated with Rome and the city. And honestly, to be quite frank, with DeFrancesco, has been pretty tough on him. And a lot of Roma fans think he's too loyal to Dzeko. I would love for Schick to be the guy of the future, honestly, because they paid a ton of money for him, but also because I feel like he's one of those guys that if they just sold or let go, he would blow up and be awesome somewhere else, and that would really be a bummer to see.
Yeah, you know, I think Roma is probably the worst club in all of Serie A to have mental issues on. There's no pressure more than in Roma. And yeah, I mean, it really seems to have been working. And yeah, the talent we always knew was there. You could see it at Samp. I mean, calling him Iturbe too, I'm glad I didn't see those conversations, because I don't think I've ever seen a player like keep his head down looking at the ball more at the professional level than him. So comparing the two, I'm with you. So let's close on this. So Roma's made a nice comeback. They're definitely in the mix for the fourth Champions League spot, which is really essential for them financially. It probably matters more than the other teams. So do you fear more Lazio, Milan, or throw in Atalanta in the mix? I think Sampdoria is a nice story, but they are a notch below. Like, which of these teams concerns you the most and why?
Yeah, I mean, to start with the financial aspect of it, if they don't finish top four, I would imagine, I mean, there are going to be, Manolis is probably all but gone. You know, I would hope Pellegrini would stay. I would hope Zaniolo would stay. But if they were to fail to make top four, I'm somewhat afraid of what the squad is going to look like next year, because they're going to have to make sales. But I do believe that they are going to finish fourth, because I think when you look at their team, they are to me just so much better than the team that they're competing with. If I had to pick one of them that scared me, it would probably be Lazio, only because I think they do have a lot of quality, even though they have a lot of holes in their roster. You know, I know Milan fans might get mad at me here, and I certainly have a few that I talk to, but they just don't scare me a ton. I'm not very impressed by, you know, I'm not very impressed by their squad. Let's see how Piontek does. You know, obviously I heard your Patrick Ewing theory, which I do think is an interesting sort of theory, but I just look at their squad and I'm just not impressed by it. Atalanta is a great story, but I can't see that continuing. And so, you know, if I had to pick one, it would be Lazio. But like I said, I really believe Roma, if they don't finish in the fourth spot, and let's not forget the Spalletti second half of the season sort of lull that he always has. And so I know Inter is what, 6, 7, 8 points ahead right now, but I'm not sure. I'm sort of waiting for them to sort of have sort of a lull where they sort of, you know, start dropping points left and right, because that's what Spalletti's done in his history. So I don't even think that third spot is out of reach necessarily, or at least think that Inter could make it interesting. But if Roma don't finish in the top four this year, it'll be a massive disappointment, because they're, like I said, their squad to me has just so much more quality in it than Lazio, Milan, or even Atalanta.
Yeah, it's going to be a great race. I think you have a good point there with Inter, because they are due a big Pazza Inter stretch. I mean, they've had some hints of it, but not really a 4 or 5 game streak of games, which could come. You know, for me, the concern is that Roma's defense, it doesn't look like they're going to try to improve it. Lazio, to me, it comes down to, you know, if Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto play like last season, then it gets interesting. If not, I would agree, mm-hmm. Roma is the favorite. So, Steve, it's always such a pleasure to have you on the podcast. If you guys are into American sports, I really recommend the work that Steve does. He's on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. The Rosillo podcast is fantastic, one of my favorites. Check that out. So, Steve, thank you so much for joining me today. Always a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, David. Anytime.